o'clock. Let's get this meeting started, shall we? It is 5:01, and I will call to order the Pacific City Joint Water and Sanitary Authority Board of Directors business meeting. It is July 7th, 2020, and we are meeting via Blue Jeans conference call. I'll call the roll. Cameron Gogan.
Yes, here.
Tom Donahue.
Here.
Don Carlton. Ann Price.
Here. I had to unmute myself.
For the record, all directors are present. Item 3A, approval of the June 2nd, 2020 budget hearing. Any comments or corrections to the meeting minutes?
I'll move that we approve the June 2nd, 2020 budget hearing meeting minutes.
I'll second.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the June 2nd, 2020 budget hearing meeting minutes. All in favor, please say aye and raise our hands.
Aye.
Motion is unanimous and passes. Thank you. Item 3B. The business meeting minutes of June 2nd, 2020. Any comments or corrections?
I have a comment, possible correction. Page 4, above unfinished business, there was a paragraph talking about the portable restroom facility at the Stucker Ridge, or no, I guess it was in the parking lot there, and whether or not a backflow assembly was required. I can't recall whether we said yes or no on that. What was the outcome of that question?
I don't believe that that was raised as a question. It was more informational. But as a follow-up, a backflow assembly was eventually required the following week, and that was installed.
Thank you. That's the only correction or comment.
Thank you, Tom.
Hearing no other comments, I'll move that we approve the June 2nd, 2020 business meeting minutes.
I'll second it.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the June 2nd, 2020 business meeting minutes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
That's unanimous. Motion passes. Thank you. Item 3C, the budget adoption meeting minutes from June 23rd, 2020. Any comments or corrections, please?
Hearing none, I will move that we approve the June 23rd, 2020 budget adoption meeting minutes.
Second.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the June 23rd, 2020 budget adoption meeting minutes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
That motion is passed by unanimous vote. Thank you. Item 4, the financial reports for A. Financial reports for accounts payable for May 5th, May 15th, and May 31st of 2020. Yes, Rochelle?
That should be June 2nd, June 15th, and June 30th. Sorry.
June 2nd, June 13th, and June 30th.
June 15th. But yeah.
June 15th. Thank you. All right. Any questions on the accounts payable for June 2nd, June 15th, and June 30th?
I have a question.
Go ahead, Tom.
June 2nd, TCB Security Services. Who's that and what was it for? It wasn't a very large amount, but I just hadn't seen it before. And that was on 104 and 105 account.
Do you want to answer this, Kirk?
Yes, would you please?
TCB is our dispatch service. So if somebody has an emergency or something, they call TCB, they dispatch to one of us, and our on-call person goes and fixes it.
So, thank you.
Hey, I would like to redeem myself somewhat. I'm aware of their full name as Taking Care of Business. TCB, I drew a blank.
June 15th, Inland Environmental Resources, 2004 and 104 account with considerable monies there. I hadn't heard of Inland Environmental Resources Incorporated before.
Yes, that is actually the company that we're purchasing the magnesium hydroxide from. So the smaller of the two purchases was the actual chemical. The higher of the two purchases was for the storage containment and the chemical feed pumps that we're using to feed that liquid magnesium hydroxide.
Okay. June 15th, Ollie Rogers and Company, I thought, are they a lawyer?
No.
I thought we were using Williamson for our lawyers.
Yeah, that was our auditing firm.
That's all the comments I had. Question.
Thank you, Tom. Any other questions?
Bachman Turner Overdrive.
Taking care of business, Cameron.
I'll entertain a motion.
Let me get back. Trying to get back to the agenda. I will move that we approve the accounts payable for May 5th, May 15th, and May 31st of 2020.
We need a correction on the date, Sam.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. June. I'm reading on the agenda. Okay.
The dates are June 12th, June 15th, and June 30th.
Okay, I'm having trouble assembling the dates.
I move that we accept the accounts payable for June 2nd, June 15th, and then June 30th, 2020.
I'll second.
Thank you. It has been moved and seconded that we approve the accounts payable for June 2nd, June 15th, and June 30th. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion is unanimous and accepted. Thank you. Item 4B, are there any questions for the authority manager on the fiscal year report?
I have a couple. Actually, this is for Ms. Michelle. And this is an accounting question. On the first page, under interest earned revenues, we had $27,500, but on the year-to-date amount, there was $37,296, and it shows year-to-date variance of negative $9,796. I noticed throughout the document that there were several negative things, not necessarily for interest, but other items that were both revenues and expenses. Does that mean that we, in this case, does that mean that we actually had more interest than we budgeted for? Is that how that works?
That's absolutely correct. Yes.
All right. And I had another question on page 3. Under revenues, once again, on the 003 account,
yes.
Said interest earned LGIP. What does that acronym stand for?
Okay, so LGIP is the investment pool account at the Oregon State Revenue, and that's where we put all of our investments. We don't go to a savings account. We go to a pool account through the state of Oregon. And yes, we did earn that much interest.
Cool. On page 5, under the 004 account, we mentioned lift station improvement, CI, capital improvement, obviously. I'm really at a loss. This is more for Kurt. What does lift station refer to? Is that a pumping station of some sort?
Yes, that would be our sewage pump stations, otherwise known as lift stations.
Okay.
And we did spend a portion of that budget, but certainly not all of it.
Okay. On page 9, under materials and supplies, 104 account chemicals, we showed under a year-to-date variance, we showed a negative $11,000. Was that our new chemicals? Did they cost more?
Less.
About halfway down the page, page 9.
Less, not more, less.
It said year-to-date amount, $26,000. We only budget.
Yeah.
Yes, the magnesium is costing us more than we expected. Because it was a trial to begin with.
Well, this is the end of the year, so I thought it was important to kind of ask some of these questions, as it was a little confusing to me. Finally,
you'll have one more time to ask that because we're not done with the year-end bills. So next month you'll get the final year end for 2020,
okay.
Plus you'll get the first month of 2021.
Okay, I had one more question on page 12.
Before you get on, I would like to clarify one thing on those chemical costs for wastewater. Our coagulant that we're using for producing land application solids, it is a very expensive chemical, and I think that had a significant impact on the budget this year as well.
Yeah.
Okay, why did it change then?
It improves the quality of our cake that we produce for land application, so it's an expense that I think we're going to need to budget for, and I hope that we budgeted for it this year. I think we did.
Okay, thank you. One last question on the general account. Page 12, about three quarters of the way down the page on 105 account, backflow prevention expense. It was a lot more. What exactly what was backflow prevention expense? Backflow meters or what?
Yeah, I could start it, and Rochelle, I know you have a thorough answer, but I believe we contracted some of our backflow testing out. But Rochelle, if you have something to add to that.
No, that's exactly it. We lost an employee. He moved on, and he was our primary backflow tester. And so we didn't have enough staff to do all the backflow testing because sometimes there's 50 to 60 a month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How many do we have?
100.
Okay, that was all my questions.
Thank you, Tom. Cameron?
How many backflow devices do we have?
I want to say we have like 220.
Oh, wow.
And they take at least 30 minutes to test, so...
John?
Question on pages 9 and 12. What was the excess from the miscellaneous category? There was 500 budgeted in each department, but, something like $17,000 difference.
I'll defer to Michelle.
You can answer it or I can. It was shipping Kirk here.
Oh,
gotcha. Okay, thank you.
Did that go in a box?
I'm not cheap.
For sure.
You were actually much more or less expensive. expected. You saved us quite a bit of money. So kudos to you.
Thank you, Michelle. And I didn't realize I went under miscellaneous.
We didn't have anywhere else to put you, bud.
You could have put him under shipping.
I'm not sure that's a line item.
Return to sender.
Kirk, especially the board allotted a certain amount of money for moving out, and you were very frugal and came in way under budget of what we had allowed. So yeah. I thank you for that.
Thank you. I appreciate the help.
Any other questions on the fiscal report?
For the chemical. Now, isn't that why we switched on? I think Michelle and I were talking about it, the expenses of the chemicals. Is that why we also changed a little bit of our chemicals?
Yeah, Cameron, I'd like to answer that. But yeah, the magnesium hydroxide, we thought it was going to save us money, and it ended up costing us close to the same amount. But the huge advantage is that it's not a powder. It's going to accumulate on all of our equipment and materials. So I really do believe that the budget was most impacted by the polymers that are used for producing the cake.
Now,
we'll look more closely at our magnesium hydroxide costs, and I'd be happy to get back to the board in the future.
So is that the stuff that it goes into the dumpster can, it goes to the dump, or is that the stuff that we spread up on the field up in Beaver?
The finished product is what is spread across the field, yes.
Okay.
Kirk?
Yes.
Don?
Did I understand you to say earlier that one of the major costs was the container or... Or that those chemicals, or the way you distribute it, or something like that, or
the $9,000 capital improvement charge. It was an enhancement, and Michelle, you may know better than I do. Did we pay for that out of that same account, or did that come out of a capital account?
No, that's a capital account.
Oh, okay. So that doesn't really explain why the chemical costs were above budgeted amounts. But if you don't mind, I will certainly look into that.
No, wait. Sorry. I want to interrupt for a second. Even sure. If it goes into 004, that is a capital account. And that's where the $8,000 came from, right, Michelle? Yeah. So that is a capital account. It's not operating.
The operating account?
No.
Okay. Okay, so that may have been the reason. It wasn't the cost of the chemical, per se. It was the cost of the equipment to feed it.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. That's the only other question I had.
Thank you. All right, moving on. Kirk, manager's report.
Oh, man.
Did we vote on that?
We don't vote on the fiscal report. We just ask questions about that.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm starting the manager's report off this month with COVID-19 impacts. First, I'd like to point out that the office remains closed to in-person transactions. And considering the fact that COVID-19 cases are increasing across the country at this point, I don't see any immediate need to make any changes this month. And so unless the board has a desire for us to open to in-person transactions at this time, I'm not making a recommendation to do it for at least another month.
Sorry.
I agree with that completely, Kirk, and I'm while Tillamook County county, as a county, hasn't experienced a tremendous amount of COVID cases. There have been some, but I think the more troubling development is as we gradually open up the vacation rentals and the other lodgings. We are, obviously, that's good for business. We're having more people into town and that kind of thing, but I think that also presents an opportunity for more interaction of the virus with the people that live here full-time and might come into the office and pay or have conversations. And if we're not experiencing a high demand for that, I personally feel like the conservative approach is better. That, of course, does not rule out any kind of electronic meetings with people that might want to have conversations, or telephone, or possibly even an individual meeting, I guess, in person, based on your judgment. And I completely trust your judgment on that. So I feel like conservative is a better approach.
Thanks, Ben. Cameron?
Yes. If we do open, do we need to go ahead and put up some plexiglass as far as a barrier for our employees and customers?
Yeah, I agree. And when we get to that point, we'll plan on doing something of that sort.
Has there been an interest of people, people calling? Has that risen?
We haven't seen an increase in any concerns about being able to come in and transact. So that's a part of the reason we're not recommending that we do anything immediately. We're able to accommodate our customers over the phone and online. If that changes, I'll certainly make the board aware of that.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Okay.
Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you, Kurt. This is your show.
That's okay. That was, I hope, the most complicated bullet point that I included. our operations staff has remained very healthy. Our water demands are returning to normal. I can say that with confidence. And our sewer flows are also returning to normal. And our office staff continues to work remotely as much as possible, with Rochelle doing most of our office duties here. And Michelle's very efficient at working from home, I can tell you. If there's no other questions, there's a couple of projects I'd like to go over. And the first one is Broughton Road water main replacement. We're working on that this week. We're making some of the service connections to the seven homes that are served off that new 2-inch water main. We installed a whole... is that me echoing? Okay. We installed a holding tank cover, which was surprisingly successful. The holding tank is really sort of our finished wastewater treatment holding tank prior to ultraviolet disinfection. And it's important that we minimize the amount of algae that accumulates in that basin. And so we purchased a tarp for just over $1,000 that has been able to prevent algae growth to a significant degree. And it's in fact so successful it could become a permanent solution. The alternative would be to construct a roof over that structure, and that would be much more costly. We also replaced the fire hydrant last month, a hydrant that was serving the Woods community, and our water quality report was distributed to our customers, and at least it's been made available to our customers, and there's copies at the post office. I've been dropping off copies there for customers that see our notice at that location, and the certification form has been submitted to the state. And then I wanted to recognize, I saved the best for last, I wanted to recognize Rochelle, as many of the board members already have, for her recent accomplishment in getting her associate degree of applied science in business administration. And like Michelle likes to say, we're very proud of her. Good job, Ms. Rochelle.
Thank you.
And
way to go, Perky.
That's really, there's a couple things I didn't discuss, but if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer any questions the board might have.
I have a comment. Going through your charts at the end of your report, it's very enlightening of where we are month to month and everything from rags to non-revenue water, which is my major question that kind of jumped out at me. What the heck is non-revenue water percent? Is that the water loss?
Yes, Tom. Thank you for one reminding me to cover it. I wasn't intending to disregard the new charts that I provided, but I put it at the end of the report and I almost went right past it. But you raise a very good question. Non-revenue water, which is tracked on the third page of the graphs that I've provided in the board packet. The non-revenue water is something that measures the amount of water produced, which is our supply of water from Horn Creek and our well fields. The sum of those two water sources, the volume of water measured from those sources, is typically in water utilities considerably higher than what we measure going to our customers. And so that's called either non-revenue water or unaccounted for water. And in this final report, I refer to it as non-revenue water. It's the difference between the amount of water produced and the amount of water that was billed to customers. There's always a difference there. And if we produce more water than we bill our customers, it's considered non-revenue.
I noticed that May was considerably higher than both April and June. Is that because possibly May was a very rainy, or that, what would account for that?
There's a lot of factors that go into effect there, and this it will be a matter of fine-tuning. By looking at these numbers, I'm going to be able to eventually be able to, my hope is to recognize when we have water leaks underground that aren't surfacing. Like, for example, the Woods fire hydrant appears to have been leaking for months and months.
Oh.
If not that long, at least weeks, it had been leaking. And so if it was leaking in May and we fixed it in June, you would see a significant reduction in our non-revenue water. And that could, I think that did contribute. The other factor that we have to be very cautious of is that large flow meters and flow revenue meters are very accurate, but large production meters can be inaccurate. That perhaps at a well field, one of the wells may be under registering by a little bit, and that can make a big difference over time. So meter accuracy is always something that is expected. So it's unreasonable to expect the water produced to equate exactly to the water billed. But you can try to get close. And a good goal to keep in mind for unaccounted for water is about 10%. I'd like
to how often do we calibrate those flow meters?
Typically annually, and we recently calibrated some meters, but we've identified some problems with one of our well meters that we're gonna be working more on meter accuracy here in the next few months.
Thank you.
Kurt?
Cameron?
Does this also go as far as when the fire department hooks up to a hydrant? Now, are those considered on the flow, anything that we don't charge fire department for water?
We're currently really not reducing our water produced by that amount. I expect to do that. Rich, I know the authority already has a report that tracks some water usage that isn't sent, delivered to customers, like fire flow, water quality flushing, things like that. My intent is eventually I will take that out of our report so that I don't consider that part of the water produced, and so it'll be a corrected non-revenue water. So what we're really trying to see is what water can we not account for? And so if the fire hydrant's using water, they report that to us, we can account for that. And so I could subtract it off of that difference. But up to date, we haven't been subtracting any of that, which is why some of these numbers are considerably higher than I expected to be in the future.
So what can we, how much can we produce from each well? Are you able to calculate how much money we can get from corn crib, or spit wells, or wells back behind the plant?
Well, and we know what the capacity of Horn Creek is. We know what the capacity of each well is. We typically like to run the wells at 100 gallons per minute flow rates. And at that flow rate, we really don't have to run them around the clock. So we have the capacity to produce that. But what we really want to look at in the future more is the impacts that has on our groundwater aquifer when we run it for even longer periods of time. So there's more things than just the pumping capacity from the wells as to how much total capacity we have. And then, go ahead, Ann.
No, you go ahead and finish your thought.
Something I was looking at today when I was reviewing this is if you look at the difference on water produced, the decline from June 2019 to 2020 in the amount of water we produced last month was about a 20% drop. And I'm looking at the graph, the very first graph on the first page. If you look at our wastewater influent flow right below that, it shows a 7% drop. So our wastewater flows coming into our wastewater plant only dropped 7%, but our water flows dropped 20%. And if we go back to that fire hydrant repair, I'm not sure this was the whole difference, but we repaired the fire hydrant, and it made the water produced significantly less than the previous month. Now, a year ago, it could have been something else that caused that difference. But the point I'm trying to make is the water produced declined by 20%, but our billed water reduction was more in line with our wastewater influent flow and only dropped 6%. And I moved to the first graph on the second page. It's sort of a complicated concept I introduced, but that's sort of how I like to look at it. I'm really interested for revenue purposes in watching what the billed water usage is and comparing that to a year ago. And what I'm seeing is it's only 6% lower than it was a year ago. If I relied on the amount of water we're producing, it's much more inaccurate because there could be leaky fire hydrants out there one month and not the next. And so it can show as much as a 20% decline. It would have us panicking where, in fact, water sales aren't that much lower. Ann?
So I had a question about the billed sewer chart, and I really like these charts, by the way, because I can see it as opposed to having to wade through it all, you know.
Well, and trust me, I don't expect the board to listen to me go on like this every month.
No, this is very helpful to our understanding of the issues that you're dealing with and that you're managing for us. So I think it's a learning experience for all of us, and I value that and appreciate you doing it. But I have one observation, which is just my simple brain, and when it comes to numbers, is the billed water chart and the billed sewer chart have different dollar amounts on the left-hand axis.
Yes.
And so that confused me at first, but I tried to work my way through that. And I didn't know if there would be any way they could have the same dollar amounts on both of those charts, or would that
just be silly? I could probably tweak the ranges to where they're closer. We do.
Okay.
By tweak, I mean just the range. I noticed this tops out at $140,000 a month on sewer, where it only goes up to $80,000 on water.
And that might just be me.
But the revenue did exceed $100,000 for sewer, where it didn't exceed that for water, which is partially why the scales aren't exactly the same. But I see no reason why I couldn't make those the exact same scales with both of them, with maybe a peak range of 120,000.
That would make my glance at it, I think, more clear. But my real question for you is, in the build sewer dollars, and if you already answered this, I'm sorry, I didn't catch this. For April, May, and June, there's a significant reduction in build sewer dollars for this year. But the build water is staying at relatively the same level.
Uh-huh.
And so that to me means we're just not flushing the toilet as often. We're pumping as much water. Is that a result of less commercial business activity, and where we have surcharges for above certain units?
Yeah, keep in mind, $30,000 of that decline in billed sewer each month was the suspension of the capital improvement charge for the wastewater treatment plant. So we can actually visualize that $30,000 drop per month.
I was thinking of it as actual sewer received and pumped, and I get that now. Perfect.
That's sort of why I like looking at the flow first, so I can see what the actual declines in volume was. But the table below, the build sewer, shows the revenue decreases as a result of the CIC, as well as some of the types of users that weren't using water or sewer as they normally would in April, particularly.
Okay, thank you. That's perfectly clear.
Great. And I'm happy to talk about any other charts, but I certainly won't bring up anything that the board isn't interested in hearing right now. John?
Well, I think it's of interest to note for the community that the rags total jumped as we opened up our lodgings around the area. From May to June, the rags removed from lift stations went jump right back up.
And that's how I read that chart as well. And Don, did you have a question?
Yeah, I do, and I apologize. I keep getting messages that my internet is horrible, so I apologize if this doesn't come through, if I miss anything. First of all, thank you. I think these charts are really great, and I, for one, want to hear you talk about these a lot. So that's just my vote. The one thing that did jump out at me, I'm just curious, the wastewater influent flow has increased over the last 3 years in both January and February. So do you think that's just a result of more rainfall in those months?
I do. I really do. And you can tell because the water produced didn't go up in those months, yet right. The sewer did. I interpret that the same way as you as well.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Kurt?
Yes?
Is there any way to track something like that with the water? I mean, what would be the influences of decline or reset? Either way would be the water, rainwater, time of the year, or any other variables that would do that?
For water
produced? For water, yeah. To deviate from what we have, like we know, we have the $30,000 as far as the money that decreased in the usage, but it would be nice to know why there was a deficit of it. That makes sense?
I spent some time looking at these closely as I was developing these charts, and I was surprised at some of the things I saw. Some things are easily explainable, and others not quite as clear. And the big unknown is often how accurate are the meters we're using when you're talking about volume of sewer and water. So,
how many meters are you talking about? What are the ages of those meters?
Well, some of our meters are new, like our wastewater treatments. Our wastewater influent flows are almost new, 1 year old now. So that's extremely reliable data that we have currently. Doesn't seem to vary that much from previous data, because there was an old partial flume that was very accurate once upon a time. I'm not sure any of these reads came from that, but that was a very accurate way of measuring wastewater flows. I'd be happy to spend time with any of the board members to go over any of these charts in detail if you have questions. But I hope I answered your question, Cameron.
No, you did. I mean, it is helpful. Because you don't think of much of what flows, the numbers and everything. Yeah, I like it. So awesome job, thank you.
You're welcome. Oh, and that's the end of my manager's report.
Thank you. Thanks, Kurt. We really appreciate you bringing this additional data to our attention, and I look forward to it as it evolves, because I know it's just getting started in terms of manipulating it a bit to make it more understandable and more accurate. Item 6, unfinished business. Number 1, 2020 water and wastewater master plan. Kurt, you're back on.
Okay. Okay, the 2020 Water and Wastewater Master Plan work is ongoing on that. One thing that has changed in the last month is we've installed 3 wastewater flow meters at 3 separate locations in our wastewater collection system. And by doing that, we're going to be able to split up our collection system into 4 quadrants. I think a quadrant is 4, so in the quadrants, we'll divide it up into quadrants, and so when we see our flows increase at one of those locations, we'll know where any stormwater infiltration is coming from. I think I know where I suspect it most, so it will be interesting this winter with those flow meters in place, and I forgot to say that those flow meters will be in place for the next 9 months. We got them installed 2 weeks ago, and we're seeing data. An additional thing we can see with wastewater flow meters is we'll be able to see what our hourly flows are. We refer to those flows as diurnal flows, and we'll be able to see what our peak hour is in the day. It's going to help us plan for our future demands to ensure that our plant and our collection system has the capacity to meet those demands down the road. It will make our master plan more accurate. Tom?
Last month we had some discussion about flow data, and because of COVID, because that master plan is so critical, are we going to average like our summer months to try to help balance out our February through June flow data because of lack of a tourist or whatever you want to call it, usage?
That's a good point, Tom. As I was going through the minutes, I was trying to figure out what I was saying last month about that. And our originally, we were concerned about installing wastewater flow meters in the springtime this year because COVID demands had changed our normal flow patterns. But we installed it just before the 4th of July holiday so that we could capture some summer flows. And from those tables we looked at in the manager's report, I'm feeling pretty confident it's going to be representative of a typical summer. Things are almost back to normal. I would say within 5% of being normal. So
what about those
data we're collecting now should be representative of summer flows. And then as we go into fall, winter, and spring, we'll wrap up this report.
So there's a certain amount of guesstimation going to be involved as far as, you know, February, March, April?
Yes. I think that is probably the season we're going to see the most stormwater infiltration. And so for the wastewater model, I think this is going to be valuable data for us.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, I think that was all I had in regards to that first item.
Let me ask a question if I could. So we installed these flow meters in July and they'll be done 9 months from now, which would be April. And I'm assuming that the information from the flow data will be part of the wastewater master plan. Does that mean that our water master plan will be delayed by the same length of time? Or are we able to get the water master plan sooner?
Yes, I anticipate our water master plan is going to move forward as originally scheduled. So I hope to get results from our water master plan near the end of the year.
Okay. Our contract with Parametrics was not written for separating them out. Will there be a different charge for us because they'll be handling them in a little bit different way?
At this point, I didn't get any indication that there would be, no.
All right, great. Thank you. All right, then. Item 6.2, wastewater treatment plant disc filter installation.
All right. I'm happy to talk briefly on this item because the disc filter showed up at our facility here today at our office. And it's basically sitting on its platform, and it's being connected by McClure & Sons currently, although they may have left about 10 minutes ago. But excited to see it here. It made it here. I originally thought it came from Italy, but it came from overseas, and it took about 3 weeks for it to travel across the country, but it did eventually get here.
And that was because of the COVID delay shipping, or
could have been that. I think some of the mechanical connections are going to take us a little longer than I anticipated. But talking to the contractor, it looks like within 2 or 3 weeks it should be just about finished and ready for use, just in time for August, hopefully. And that's all I have on that.
All right, any questions? All right, next item under unfinished business. Number 3, the wastewater treatment plant capital improvement fund charge. Sean, you had requested that we pull this back onto the agenda on our July meeting to talk about whether or not we would amend what we approved in the budget for the wastewater treatment plant CIC charge is 15% below what was originally assessed, well, not what was originally assessed at, but the what was assessed at for the previous budget year. So, Sean, do you want to talk a little bit about where you're at with that?
Well, so what we did in the budget was a 15% reduction for the year. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah, I'm okay with that level.
Okay. Any other comments then? All right, the board will let me know if this needs to come back up if things change. Otherwise, we'll consider that what's in the budget is where we're at.
So,
excuse me.
Carolyn,
Cameron?
Bring it up next week, just look at it, see where we're at.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. Could you try again?
Could we check on it again next month to see where we're at? If anything needs to change on that 15?
Certainly, if you feel like there's something that needs to be looked at, then let me know. Yes.
Yeah, I just if anything changes in the time between, you know, a lot can change and there we go.
Okay, thank you. Item 7, new business. The payroll bracket update for fiscal year 2021. This is on the agenda as a item because we all missed the fact that this chart was not included in this year's budget, as it usually is. We were too busy working on COVID-related things and busy doing the budget as we needed to do. So Kurt and I have chat about it, and he's updated it and also, I think, improved upon it. And Kurt, do you want to present that?
Sure. What I did was I took, and I included in the packet both the 2019-2020 and the 2021 fiscal years for comparison. But what I did for the 2020-2021 payroll brackets is I added the Western Area CPI of 2.5% to each of the starting of the range to the top of the range. And in most cases, that covered us pretty well. There was one exception that I made to the office assistant position, which was already near the top of that range, that position. And so I actually recommend that we modify that position so that we have the ability to pay one of our more critical positions in our office, without a doubt, to a higher grade, which extended it slightly. So that we can continue to provide that employee or that position performance increases, as was budgeted. I also included some positions that were not budgeted. I'm not necessarily stating that we want to eliminate an office assistant position and replace it with office specialists. But I think in our current staffing situation, the office specialist position is more reflective of what we're requiring our employee to do. And so I'm recommending that we keep an office assistant position for down the road if there is, ever is a need for hiring an entry level office assistant, that position's available for us to recruit and hire at that level. But I feel strongly that the work that we're receiving from the current office assistant exceeds the job duties as defined in the job description. And I also did attach both job descriptions for comparison as well, with changes between the two in red. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
And Kurt, can I add to that? As long as this kind of started in two different ways. One is just noticing that this particular sheet was absent from our budget packet, and it's an informational piece because our resolutions do cover our budget amount. And this sheet has provided an opportunity for us to see the ranges of our jobs over the year, over the years. And as I went through back through the budgets of previous years, it was like, I'd forgotten we had a utility worker on there at one point. I'd forgotten that we had a lead operator on there at one point. So it isn't like we, those two positions, when there wasn't somebody in those, dropped off of this particular sheet. And I think it's important that all of our job positions, whether or not they're opened or closed, because we do have job descriptions for them, stay on this sheet and that their salary ranges are tracked so that 5 years from now or 6 years from now, we don't have to go back and start from square one. We can build on what was there. When Kurt and I had talked about the office specialist and office assistant, he was recommending that we expand the payroll bracket for office assistant. And as we went and call it office specialist, as we talked more, it seemed like the person filling the office assistant position has really taken on a great deal of more responsibility and has had a great deal more skill since when they first took on the job. So rather than expand that office assistant position, it seems that office specialist more applied better to this situation at this point in time. And so distinguishing those two would leave us in a position at some point that if we did need an office assistant, that would come in at a lower pay scale and also a lower education and experience level, and that someday we may need that. So we wanted to keep both of those rather than roll it all up in one, if that makes any sense. And Kurt, if I could add, looking at this the second or third time now, I would like us in the next rendition of this chart to the three positions that are at the bottom to say that those are closed rather than vacant, so it sounds very different than when we say the assistant management position is vacant at the top. If, or another word that might work, so that I'm not mixing up that these might be positions we would fill tomorrow or next week.
Okay. And I would also like to throw out there that it may not be necessary to include the blue current salary levels. I included those in this chart so that the board can follow where we're currently at. I would also like to offer Michelle an opportunity to say a word of her thoughts on this issue.
Thanks, Kirk. The office assistant job was a part-time, you know, less than 20 hours a week, probably maybe 20 hours a month position when I went to work there. It has evolved, obviously, because of the amount of responsibility and work at PCJWSA. I also know that the part-time workers that we did have never fulfilled the complete job description because they were part-time. We only had, in the 16 years that I have worked there, we had one person who was qualified to do all of payroll, accounts payable, and utility billing, and that was Robin Lampa, who was magnificent. But she came from Beaverton and did Springbrook there, so she knew the system, so she was really good. In the times after that, we weren't really looking for somebody that was just an office assistant to work part-time, and it was important to us that we get a full-time employee to take over my position when I retired. And this person had to do everything I can do. And we are in that matrix right now. We are in the training of that. And Rochelle DeLoe happens to be the almost perfect person for that position because she's quick, she's smart, but that doesn't have anything to do with the job. The job itself is that it can take on the responsibilities at any time. So I believe that the three positions, even if we never fill the office assistant again, I think you will try at some point, but I think it's very imperative that we have these three different variations of the job. Thank you, Kyle.
Is that something that we should have on for our budget, but not our name? We don't need a budget for
No, you're only going to have two at a time. I don't think that three positions in a budget are imperative. No, you're only going to have two people at whatever time. So, but I think the job is important.
Oh, yeah. It like you say, it has evolved and changed drastically. I want to give Rochelle kudos for taking the initiative to do the schooling. I think I think that we pay our employees to do their training and do that. I think it should be the same for Rochelle's position. We're retaining a good employee, a reliable, who's been there through thick and thin. I'm all in favor.
Thank you, Cameron. Do you have a comment for me, Sean?
Oh. You want to turn your mic on or you?
John?
Sorry about that. That's
okay.
I have comments and questions on the whole thing, so I don't know if this is the appropriate time to do it or not. So let me go back to this idea of the payroll brackets. Is this, so if I'm understanding, we're increasing the payroll brackets by the Western Consumer Price Index or something. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And is this something that the board needs to approve, or is this something you're just doing administratively?
It's never been approved before.
Sean, historically, the board packet or the budget packet has always included the payroll brackets in the back, and the payroll brackets have increased each year by the Western, well, it's now the Western region. It always hasn't been the Western area CPI rate, and that's helped us keep track of where, you know, just give us an idea of where our employee positions are and how that might affect budget in future years and so forth. So it's a piece of information.
Okay, so let me just comment on that briefly. And I know that I have seen it in prior years' budget, so I appreciate the fact that you're bringing this up as an omission. I have concern with what's going on right now about increasing pay brackets. I mean, everybody across the board right now with this COVID thing is taking a haircut, and government included. And so I'm concerned about the fact that we would be increasing our salaries right now in this particular era. So I'll just say that. When it comes to the information on the office assistant versus office specialist, I think Rochelle is doing an incredible job, and so the office specialist position for her, I think, makes a whole lot of sense. I do have a concern about mission creep, where maybe if we have these three things as three different jobs, I worry that we might start going down the path of creating another job that might not be needed. And so I'm just expressing concern, that's all. I understand, and I understand what everybody has been saying. I'm a little bit worried. I'll just say that.
Now, Sean, when you
hang on, let him finish. Hang on, Sean.
No, but when you said,
Let him finish and then we'll help you.
No, that's okay. He can ask a question.
We're talking about the three positions, the office assistant, the utility worker, and the lead, correct? Is that what you...
No, I'm talking about office assistant versus executive assistant versus office specialist. And I absolutely think that Michelle's role, I can see very much, in my opinion, I think Rochelle is the perfect person to take over for Michelle when she retires. I'm a little bit worried about mission creep, and I worry that having these three different job descriptions might lead to having another employee, and I don't know that it's justified right now. I'm just expressing some concern.
Can I respond to that?
Sure, for sure. I would like you to.
There is absolutely no reason to have a third employee. Absolutely none. My intention is that when I retire, that Rochelle take the full-time position of executive assistant, and if we could find a part-time person, that would be appropriate because she would have less training involved. If we need a second full-time employee, there would never, in my opinion, at the rate that we are at this moment and the growth that we've had, would there be a third person in the office.
So would your thought process be that as you transition into retirement, in a perfect world, Rochelle transitions into your role, and then do we then hire the next person that's Rochelle's replacement as an office assistant that then would then rotate potentially
exactly
into the specialist role?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking.
Okay, so it's kind of you're thinking of setting it up as something analogous to the
plan.
Right. So it's sort of analogous to the operator in training and how they
Okay. That's exactly the thought. And that's why that third position had to be there. You needed a middle, you had to have a roll-up place to go.
Right. Okay,
and
thank
she's way above an office assistant.
I agree with you. And on that part, I completely agree with you. And I just wanted to make sure, and I get nervous. I think, especially right now,
I'd be really
sensitive to stuff, so...
If I were retired and I came to a board meeting and you were thinking about hiring a third, I would be all over you, board members. It's not necessary.
Good. Okay. I just wanted to make sure. I know that sometimes, you know.
It's very clear to me in my head that.
Tom, I'll get to you in a second. Tom, I'll get back to you in a second. Sean, I just wanted to add, too, I think we had this discussion when we were talking about an assistant manager and the lead operator role was still on our chart. And it's like we wouldn't need a lead operator and an assistant manager in a small operation like ours. But we didn't eliminate the position totally because in 10 years things might be different or we might not need that assistant manager then. We might need the lead operator. So I totally agree with you. Through the budget process, we have got to watch the needs of our utility very clearly with what our budget is. And at the same time, we want to have enough positions and their descriptions available to us so that our employees are in the right spot, paid appropriately for their education and experience. So that we can manage the authority the best that we can. Tom, I'll come back to you first, and then Cameron, I'll go to you.
Okay, this seems like a good opportunity to bring up something that's crossed my mind over the last few months concerning our director salaries. A lot of small organizations, both elected positions and appointed positions, where a gratuity is granted to us, in this case, $20 a month, and that's been, if memory serves, I think that's when that goes clear back to when the authority was first formed. And personally, that, you know, that doesn't even take care of a social hour at Twist Wine Company in the afternoon. But I was thinking, since how we are volunteers, even though we are elected, I'd like to make a suggestion to throw out to the board that either we eliminate our gratuity entirely, or what seems to be the norm among other organizations is where the chair of the organization receives a higher gratuity, and the number that keeps coming around that I've seen over the years is like $100 a director or a commissioner, and like $150 for the chair, mainly because the chair does considerably more work than the average director or commissioner. Either that, considering Sean's concerns of the times as they are, the cost of chair and profits, and yet why don't we just eliminate $40 gratuity altogether?
Tom, maybe what we could do would be to research some information, because I know that we have limits on what PCJWSA can do and can't do, and present that data to the board so that we could have a discussion about it, because it's not on this agenda, and I would hate to have us have a discussion without having noticed the subject matter.
In this case, it was I considered new business, and we were talking about payrolls and enumeration, so I thought it seemed like an appropriate time to bring this up, for at least discuss it in a future agenda item. Yeah, after a little research, sounds reasonable.
All right, thank you. Cameron?
Back to the payroll. Now, Kurt, in your mind, if we fill the office, operator, lead operator position, therefore you're not thinking we need an assistant manager? And
I think the lead operator position is just listed as a closed position, and currently that we're not considering. I wouldn't recommend removing the assistant manager vacant position. I think that is the direction that we should, or at least we intend to move forward with in the future. I'm not actively pursuing to go down that path right now, and so we'll have opportunity to discuss that matter separately. But I do think the lead operator is beneficial for us to at least see what experienced operators in this field can actually cost. An agency.
Are you pretty close with your numbers?
Oh, this is right off of the older payrolls, making adjustments from year to year for the CPI. So this is what the salary was set at. I think it was about 5 years ago. But I'm not recommending at this time.
Okay.
Any other changes other than from office assistant to office specialist and the CPI adjustment.
Well, now back to the position of the office specialist. Do we pay for her training and education, the classes that Rochelle now got?
We did pay for her final class, but prior to that, I don't believe that there was reimbursement for that.
So, do you
correct me if I'm wrong?
Go ahead, Michelle.
I'm sorry, Mike, to interject, there were no prior classes, and we've always been told through the employee handbook that all courses would be reimbursed for all employees as they pertain to the company.
Yes, so our employee manual that the board has approved covers employee training. It is up to the authority manager as in charge of the operation to identify whether or not that training would count But we do reimburse employees for their education that contributes to working at our facility.
As long as they pass, obviously.
Right.
So where do we go now?
Did that end?
Yes, it did.
Okay, good. So I'm not sure, we don't need an approval for the payroll bracket, but Michelle or Kirk, help me out. Do we need approval for creating a new position called office specialist, or is that something that's under the purview of the office manager?
That's under the purview. That's under the purview of Kirk, the
authority manager.
Sorry. So unless we're affecting the budget.
There is no office manager. So, no, Kirk has the authority. He's always had the authority to create positions and deem salaries.
Within budget
as
amount.
As long as we're not impacting the budget in a major way.
Correct.
In the middle of the budget year. Okay.
Exactly. Right. Yes.
Ann?
I just, that clarification was very helpful. And I wanted to say I appreciated Kirk and Michelle's efforts in this regard and Michelle's explanation of the inner workings of the place. And I think Kirk and Michelle have teamed up to do the right thing and that we've got the right person in the position that will newly be created. So thank you all.
Well, thank you. I'm not going to be there forever. I'm on the road out, so.
Aging at home, what is your definition of forever?
When do you?
I just turned 64.
No.
And I don't
Happy
have a
birthday.
Name. So, you're never going to know. I'm not going to spill my, but it's going to happen.
Within the year?
No.
Okay.
Maybe. You never know. My husband's 70. I don't know.
As long as you like what you're doing and you're happy.
I can't
All right.
find anything. Because I don't know yet. I don't have that moment. It's not in my heart yet.
Well, again, I will echo Ann's comments and thank you all for working so hard on this and getting us up today.
Hey, Michelle, come over.
Well.
Is Rochelle putting tacks on your chair yet or anything?
No, but she's coming over right now to have a cocktail.
Sweet, can I come too?
Yeah, absolutely. Bring some wine.
Okay, item number 8, guest comments. Kirk, did you receive anything from our customers or anyone else regarding guest comments?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Item 9, director comments. Anne?
I had made a note to myself that we talked a couple of months ago and I'm about doing electronic paychecks, and I'm kind of curious if we're doing that now and if so, how it's working.
Yes.
I'll take that as a yes. Yes,
we're
doing it and it's working.
It works amazingly.
So, notwithstanding Tom's earlier comments, I'm wondering, is that possible to do with the checks that you print or cut every month for board members? Okay.
Yeah,
let me know where and how to sign up.
Okay.
And then I wondered further.
May I interrupt? I think we need board approval. That might be on the next agenda. I think we need board approval for that.
Okay,
right.
So then I'll just add this last thought. If we need board approval to do that for board members, I'm just wondering to what extent we do electronic payments with vendors that we work with.
We don't.
Zero,
we don't.
I'm taking that as a zero, because it pleases me no end to sit down and do bill pay on the computer, and it's just done, and there's no paper and no stamps, and it's so much simpler, and I'm assuming that in this day and age there are appropriate accounting principles that would cover that. So I just ask the maybe Kirk and Michelle and Rochelle to
write a policy.
Chew on that and see if they want to make a recommendation that we make some changes in the way we process payments of various sorts. So, but I'm glad the paychecks are being done electronically. Bravo.
Thank you. Don, you had a question, and Cameron, I'll go to you or a comment.
Yeah, I do. I just, in general, I'm curious, even though we haven't had guest comments or questions really in this COVID blue jeans era, I'm just curious for Michelle and Kirk, have we had much interaction at all with the, what I would call the negative Nilly crowd?
On my end, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I have not heard from them. I know Kirk has been talking to them, but no, I have. Nobody's emailed me, nobody's talked to me, nobody's called me.
Well, and then there are certain individuals that I communicate with regularly so that they're kept informed as to what we're doing. There hasn't been a need for any public comment in that regard.
Good, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Cameron?
I've got two things. Now, Kurt, you've reached out to our partners or throughout our area of the water resources and stuff, I presume. And any services that need to be provided or any needs or anything that we can help with our area?
Within our region?
Yeah. Sure, to be able to help.
From what I can tell, what I gather is all of our neighbors are doing well through COVID. There has been a task force that's been developed that's sort of a regional networking group of professional operators.
Okay.
I've kept in communication with them. One of the things they're working on currently is radio communications to an emergency command center if there were a disaster or something like that. But currently, smaller issues haven't been a major concern of any.
Well, I think before you came, we had that issue up in Meetarts, that an issue had happened and that they wanted to notify everybody. I was just wondering if there was any issues of our outlying areas. So basically, and then another thing, I would like to see after, I'm sure this COVID is not going to go away, but when we do come back as a group, I'd like to have maybe a picnic or something for the appreciation of everybody, a picnic or something for everybody and the community if interested, you know. Come
cocktail
together.
Party?
I think
there's a
guy that
knows
wine.
I know where we
can
get wine, right?
I'll gladly provide the wine when we can all get back together. Yeah. For sure.
It could be the cure to the COVID-13. We could have the Corona. Corona wine.
We can have a Corona party.
Yes.
No, it's gotta be Pacifico for sure.
Yeah, Pacifico for sure. I'll offer up my house.
All right. We'll keep that in mind, Cameron.
Everybody has. I mean, everybody's put in long, hard hours in a different way. It's stretched people, you know, we've all. Oh, okay, I got it, Michelle. Okay. No, but everybody has, and I'm really appreciative. I am.
Well, we appreciate it.
Well, let's hang in there. We may have another 12 months to go. Tom?
One last comment. Cameron did bring up a good point. I believe the security issue was at Oceanside, wasn't it, Kirk?
Yeah, it was.
And I'm wondering whether or not, what our procedures are for emergency security, that sort of thing.
We have an existing emergency response plan that I'm currently updating. that would identify how we would notify the public of anything of that nature. I've got no concerns that we're prepared to respond to any situation that could impact a water or sewer utility.
Are there any guidelines from like Homeland Security or the state of Oregon for securing our facilities?
There are actually some Oregon templates that I'd like to use for an emergency response plan, and that's sort of one of the holdups for me right now. I've got the bulk of everything completed. Now I just want to put it in a format that's recognized by the state of Oregon. So I promise I'll update the board on something in that regard within the next couple of months at least. But I would also be happy to go over our existing emergency response plan specifics with any board member that has an interest in seeing that.
The thing with Oceanside is certainly rang a bell that I think for a small district like us that no one really expected. And it makes perfect sense to be aware of what's going on, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
And I just want to, following up on Tom's question and Kirk's answer, which I look forward to seeing the new format, I just want to emphasize that we have always had in place an emergency response plan. This authority, as far as I know in my experience on the board and prior to that on the advisory committee, we have never lacked for an emergency response plan.
Nope.
And I think it's important that the community understand that and appreciate that fact. What we're talking about here is continual updating and refinements and that kind of thing, which is a healthy and reasonable step as far as the management goes. So I appreciate Kirk having a close eye on that.
Thank you. It is clearly a living document.
All right, I have just one item to add, and that's that I did reach Ryan Fleming. He and I will talk next week. He's been out on the road a couple of weeks, and we'll be back in his office, and we'll be talking about having him work with us probably either in August or September, and I'll keep the board appraised of that.
Just sit up here.
All right, then. Any other comments?
Sorry, I can't get my cat away.
Sean, I love your mask. It's 6:28, and our meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Bye, everybody.